If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know. And that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
And indeed it is. Welcome to the Russ Betts Show. Good to have you with us. We're going into hour two of this adventure here. Well, we pull back the curtain on local government and, well, try and keep you informed on a few other topics. You know, it is Memorial Day. Occurs on Monday, May 25th. And, you know, it's you need to go out there and remember those who have gone out there and made all this possible for us. You know, if you haven't flown the flag, it's really easy. Go get one. Go fly it. If you got one, put it out. Don't forget. It's very important. It means a lot to a lot of people that we honor them. You know, in case you didn't know, it's a little tidbit. It was a federal holiday starting in 1971 that gave all of us a reason to have a three-day weekend. But that really wasn't what it was about. In 1971, it was to honor those who made those three-day weekends possible. But so anyhow, if you're out there doing a family gathering or whatever you're doing, and I guess there's all kinds of COVID-19 guidelines on that. In the first hour of the show, if you missed it, we went over some of the guidelines for the restaurants and what's involved in all that. And now we're going to move on to another subject. We're going to talk about jails. And I'm going to start out with an unbelievable story of a man who was arrested three times in a day, and each time he was released with a citation. And he was up in the city of Glendora. Over a 12-hour period, this guy got three, essentially, tickets. Wasn't taken to jail. He got tickets. And they're calling them citations in the story, but I guess that's what they are. But, you know, and they aren't minor incidents. So if you go read what happened, is the first incident happened around 8:30 in the morning with a break-in on a vehicle. And when officers arrived at the scene, they contacted, I'm going to call him the suspect, who was attempting to drive away in a stolen vehicle. And in addition to driving in a stolen vehicle, he had a whole bunch of stolen property in the vehicle. So he was technically arrested, which means detained. But rather than take him to the jail, they simply issued him a citation. And about 1 hour later, he was released. So some of his punishment was stand around for an hour while the officers keep you there detained, and then they write up the ticket, give it to you, and say, okay, go on your way. Have a nice day. Well, around 2:30 in the afternoon on the same day, they got a report of an unknown man carrying a box and walking through front yards of homes, just helping himself to whatever was in the neighbor's homes. And when officers arrived, they encountered the same suspect the second time, and he had a box of stolen property, and again, they detained him, they wrote him a citation, and they let him go. And finally, after several hours later, at around 9 o'clock in the evening, they got a call that a vehicle had been stolen out of a parking lot, and you guessed it, it was the same guy. So officers tracked the vehicle, located it. They went on a high-speed chase that ended in Pasadena. And the guy was in possession of a stolen vehicle, and he was again arrested for evading officers. And you would think that would be enough to put him in jail, but it wasn't. He again got a third citation and said, go about your business. Well, I don't think the officers told him to go about his business of stealing, but they basically said, go on your way. Now, this isn't uncommon, because last weekend in Chino Hills, they had a guy who was arrested four times over the course of 2 days, and again, just cited and released. And you sit there and you say, well, why is this? And I've been hearing as a council member that, they're cited and released because their jails are just immediately releasing them. The jails are full, they're not taking them, and there's no reason to take them up to jail. And the officers have to travel there, and they put them, get to the jail, and the jail says, sorry, we're full. And that was the impression I had. So I wanted to find out exactly, you know, is that true? So we, the running joke is that the criminals are back in the city before the officer is. And in reality, that's not the case. It does take time to process at the jail, but it's not a situation where the criminal is released immediately. And I know that because I got curious and I started making some phone calls. I called up to Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco, very helpful, said, hi, let me explain to you the process, and are more than happy to let you know what the details are. So I did that. So, you know, but the reports are that when someone is arrested in the morning, taken to jail, released, can't be arrested, you know, they're getting multiple arrests, and that they can't take them to jail because the jails won't take them. So in response to this, some police departments are just no longer bothering to take those they apprehend, the arrestees, to the jail. You know, they catch somebody in the commission of a crime, and normally you put them in handcuffs, ride them in the back of the car up to the jail, and that's where then they get processed. But instead of that, they're doing this cite and release business. And basically it translates into a ticket. And as you see in Los Angeles, 4 times in one day with one guy, 3 times another day with another, with serious crimes. Auto theft isn't any minor deal. So, like I said, I wanted to see what was involved, so I made a phone call, and I find out that, you know, there's a couple of situations. And it isn't just a matter of they show up and that they say the jail is full. Sorry, we're not taking them. What they say is that it is crowded and they are releasing them, but basically what happens, if it's minor petty theft, it's going to be about, they're going to be taken into the jail, and there's a determination made. If it's a very serious crime, everybody gets searched, but if it's a very serious crime, they're going to be put into the prison clothes and have their other clothes put in and possessions put in a property bag. And if it's something where they're pretty sure somebody's going to be released because it's like maybe minor petty theft, they're going to put them in the holding area in their street clothes. So I'm sure the inmates are sitting there saying, well, you're not going anywhere soon because you've got the prison garb on, but hey, you get to get out soon. And I'm sure that distinction is made. But the whole processing time is about 3 or 4 hours from the time they get dropped off to where they would get released if it was a minor petty theft. Now, a minimum of 6 hours would be if somebody came in and they appear to be intoxicated or under the influence of something, and they're not just going to go release them, put them out the doors in that inebriated state. So there you go. So if you figure somebody gets arrested or gets apprehended in the commission of a crime, and then the police officers do their normal thing, and apparently up in Glendora, it took about an hour for them to process everything before they got them the ticket. So however long it takes for that person to be sitting there, you've all seen it, it's a person sitting there on the sidewalk with their hands behind their back and handcuffs while the officers are either going through the car or whatever they do. And then they take the person and they transport them off to jail. That's the normal process. And that person gets this very terrible, you know, nobody wants to ride in the back of a car with their handcuffs, you know, with the hands behind their back and handcuffs. I don't think there's anybody that really enjoys that. That's not an enjoyable moment in life. And then getting dropped off at the jail and, hi, come on in, and then, you know, now we're going to search you, and we're going to put you through all this, and you're going to wait in this room with all these people, and, you know, you're about 30 miles away from home, and then you got a phone call, you got to get somebody to come out and pick you up, and maybe it's one of your friends that says, again? You want me to drive out there and pick you up again? Hey, dude, you got to give me some gas money. And they spend about 3 or 4 hours there, and then they're released, and they got to find their way home, and that apparently is about all the penalty that a city can muster. And so you have to wonder, okay, so, you know, they're not exactly back to town the minute that, you know, before the officers are, but they may be back to town 5 hours later. And maybe they're committing a crime again, and maybe they're taken back up to jail again. I don't know. But, that's so if that's the only punishments out there, what decision does a city and a city police department make? Well, our job is to arrest and take him to jail. Basically, that's the basic function. Our job isn't to play judge and jury or, you know, any of that. It's just to send him off to jail. And there may be practical considerations why they do the cite and release, but from a public standpoint, I think the universal position would be, you know what, if the most you can get them is, you know, out of the city for 5 hours for stealing a bicycle out of my garage, send them up there. You know, don't just write them a ticket and let them go. I'm getting lots of stuff stolen. I mean, the car thefts are, there's a guy who had his car stolen, his truck, his work truck stolen. Nice, nice new work truck. And they recovered it, but after some damage had been done to it, and it was, you know, it took them 2 months to get all the repairs to the truck done so they get it back to him in a condition where, you know, it was back to normal. And the very next day, the truck was stolen again. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten out there. And, you know, maybe if you've got somebody sitting in a jail for 3 hours, plus the hour it takes, the 2 hours it takes, 5 hours they're off the street, maybe that's one less vehicle stolen. Maybe that's one person's life that's not so disruptive. And if the jails were completely empty and people and waiting for them, I mean, if the jails were there, operating normal, not overcrowded, whatever, you'd be taking them there anyhow. So it's no change to the operations, the procedure. The only decision that's being made is, well, they're getting released so quick, why even bother taking them there? And I'm taking the view, the reason you take them there is because if all we can get is 5 hours of getting them off the street for stealing a bicycle out of a car, out of a garage, or stealing a car, or whatever else they're doing, do it. It's way better than just giving them a ticket. That's just absolutely absurd. And we all know it's absurd what's going on in the state of California with this stuff. I know there's some people that think nobody should be in jail. That ain't me. You steal my bicycle. You steal my car. You steal from me. I want you in jail. I don't want you just getting a ticket. So now to the question of, are the jails accepting people? And they recognize, the people I talk to, is that, you know, there's officers out there that probably are just figuring, you know, why bother? They're just going to be back on the street again, so they're not sending them there. But they said, we have plenty of room there. We can take them in. That's what we do. That's our job. And yes, we have to process them and then release them. But again, they're not the judge setting the sentence. They're doing what they're told from their higher-ups in the whole process. And the problem is, higher up the line. That's where you want to get your aggravation. But right now, you work within the system. You don't just throw your hands up and say, okay, well, forget it. We're going to be complicit in the system. Now, I do have some news on the Indio jail that I happened to learn. It's a brand new jail and intake facility. They're not holding people there, but it is functioning and operational for the jail intake. Police can take the arrestees down there for their 3 or 4 hour wait. We'll give you some of those details on that. This is Russ Betts on, what else? The Russ Betts Show here on iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs. A Palm Spring that's a little less quiet than it was because, well, things are starting to open up. Back with more, much more, in just a bit.
Live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
All right, we're back. Solve that arrestee problem, all the people getting arrested. They built a new jail down in Indio. But, well, staffing, it's going to cost a whole lot of money, so it's not quite ready to accept inmates. And I forget how many beds are in there, but it's a nice big new jail. But they are using the intake facility. So if police departments in the Coachella Valley are looking for a place to send somebody that they've arrested and they want them to be processed rather than issuing them a citation. They can go down to the Indio jail and at least impose a sentence on somebody of 3 or 4, maybe 5 hours before they can get out of there. The old jail is scheduled for demolition, and apparently that's going forward. So all the construction plans are continuing. It's just the staffing. And the city, the county, Riverside County that operates the jail is facing a huge budget problem. So, you know, like everybody else, they've got to figure out where the money's coming from. And the cost of the jail isn't building it. The cost is operating it. So we'll see where that one goes. But bookings are seem to be down right now. And it's probably, that's, you know, the report out of the jail is that bookings, people coming in actually getting booked are down, and they say they have the capacity. But officers just are not taking people down there. They're just saying, hi, here. There must be a run on ticket books. If you're a company that supplies police departments with ticket books, you know, for like cite and release tickets, they must be, maybe police department's ordering a whole bunch more of those these days. And hey, we don't need as many handcuffs. We need more ticket books. And I know I'm going to get in trouble. We're being a little facetious. But, you know, I'm watching some of this stuff going on. And I sit there and I see some of these orders that are being handed down in this COVID crisis by the governor. And, you know, there's some decisions that need to be made. Not every law that's on the books can be enforced. You've got to make a decision which one you're going to enforce. Now, some of the laws are, well, obviously car theft and everything else. Those are something we're going to go after. But some of these regulations, and this has been part of the complaint with these COVID regulations, is that, well, what is illegal seems to be, you know, makes no sense. The best example I can give you is that recently community swimming pools at HOAs are allowed to be open. The water has been determined to be safe for people to swim. But the water in a community swimming pool, like for our city pool or any other city pool, is for some reason not determined to be safe, and so nobody can go swim there. Or a hotel can't open its pool because that water is not safe. So on one hand, you've got a swimming pool water that's safe, but on the other hand, you have the exact same water, chlorine, everything else same, and it's not safe. And I know there's somebody in Sacramento, a think tank, a group of people that sat and spent a lot of hours figuring out what the justification for that is. But I can't figure it out. And then we have people who have their travel trailers being stolen out of their homes, out of their front yards. A gardener lost his truck while he was working. I mean, he's actually out there a gardener. You know, they all pull up, neighbor gardener with his truck and his trailer of tools behind him, and he's out there with his leaf blower. And I'm watching this video. KSQ carried this story. They have the video. And you watch this guy's gardener's out there with his leaf blower. You know, noise, can't hear his truck start. And you see this guy walk up, get in the truck, and take off. He loses his truck while he's working in somebody's yard. So you got that going on. And you think, all right, well, you know, I think I'm going to direct some police efforts to trying to stop some of that. But there's a choice that needs to be made when the governor hands down his orders. And so you have to decide, do I send my officer to go to this swimming pool to tell them, hi, this pool water is deemed unsafe, so I'm going to go spend my resources doing that? Or am I going to spend my resources maybe taking care of some of the local crimes? And I'm not saying we totally ignore all these regulations, but we got to pick and choose. You just can't enforce every single law out there. So, you know, we got to, I don't know. I'm no longer in favor of some of the absurdity. I was never in favor of the absurdity. Sending an officer down to somebody who's parked in their car at the beach overlooking the sunset. I mean, how many times have you driven? I grew up by the beach cities, and it was, see it, burnout at sunset. The little beach section was called burnout, surfer lingo. And we all park there and sit there and watch the sunset. Well, they weren't out of their cars because they knew, well, we can't do that. We got a social distance, but we're going to sit in here in our car. And maybe they even had their mask on, and they were told that that was illegal. Now, how absurd is that? And they actually sent police resources there to deal with that one. Well, maybe they just figured, heck, if they're going to go arrest somebody for stealing, we're going to write them a citation anyhow. What the heck's the difference? Let's just ignore it altogether. Let's go arrest people or cite people. Let's issue those citations for people watching the sunset in their car or this pool water that happens to be a little different than other pool water. For some reason, I can't figure it out. Anyhow, all right, we're starting to ramble a little bit here. Some of this stuff's just bothering me. Some of it's just getting to me like it is everybody else. You know, it was a very, very serious time here. Every nation around the country, around the world, has gone through and taken drastic measures, the same that we have, and dealing with it effectively. But at the point that it gets to absurdity, all right, this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio. We're back with more.
Thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is The Russ Betts Show.
All right, we're taking a look at some of the regulations that are in place for the different, the coronavirus regulations coming out of Sacramento. And you got... some cities are looking at it and they're saying, you know what, we're just not going along with this. You have the city of Atwater, who basically declared themselves a sanctuary city from the stay-at-home orders. And they're up in the Central Valley. They adopted a resolution that said they're pledging to defy the state and county stay-at-home orders, and local authorities will not intervene if businesses or churches decide to open, but letting them know they do so at their own risk. And, you know, this comes at some risk to a city because the Governor Newsom has made the threat, said, hey, you know what, you may not be eligible for some disaster relief funding, and who knows what's going to happen down the line. I'm not sure it's wise for a city to do this. There's ways to accomplish the same thing. Without thumbing your nose at the governor, you just make a decision. Are we going to enforce rules regarding... we're going to pursue, people are stealing cars and stealing out of people's garages, or are we going to go tell people, hi, sorry, you can't swim in the swimming pool, or you can't park at the beach? So, well, apparently, this stuff has for every action, there's an equal reaction. And so the blowback on this is, well, the city of Atwater saying, you know what, forget it, we had enough of this. And they're not the only ones. The big news out of Big Bear Lake says they're not going to enforce the governor's orders. The city council up there unanimously approved a statement that allows businesses and residents within the city of Big Bear to take their own action regarding the governor's stay-at-home orders. They're saying they're not going to be the governor's police force when it comes to this stuff. They're going to go back to the other normal policing duties. You know, the governor does have a police force at its disposal. It's called the Highway Patrol. And, of course, if he wants to really get serious, he has the National Guard that he can employ. But apparently the city of Atwater and now the city of Big Bear have said they're just not going to do it. The city of Big Bear decided this at a special meeting on May 21st. And their statement reads, the city will not enforce the governor's orders and encourages all businesses and residents to maintain 6 feet of separation, wear face coverings, and practice good hygiene as outlined in the city plan. But if you're expecting our police department or our code department to show up, that's not gonna happen. So anyhow, there we are on the Russ Betts Show, bringing you news of Atwater and news on Big Bear Lake and what they're all doing with all this. You know, I'm gonna take a minute here to talk to you about we hear about all this tough time these restaurants are going through, and so I've done my part to go in and show up and, try and order out when I can from the different restaurants because it means so much to them. And there's a restaurant that just opened up in Desert Hot Springs called It's a Taste of India. And I'm going to tell you, the only way to describe It's a Taste of India is an explosion of authentic. If you like curry chicken as I do, oh my God, this is just... it's out of this world. And I've seen people posting on social media getting the same reaction that I did. I mean, it's just like, wow, when you taste this. And somebody posted, they got home, they went and they ordered it, they took it home, they got it all spread out, people started eating. And they how people always take a picture of the food they're getting ready to eat? Well, they showed a picture of the empty containers, and their caption was, we started eating this, and before we thought to take a picture, it was already gone. It tasted so good. So I'm going to tell you, this is some of the best Indian food I've tasted, and I love it. I love Indian food, and I particularly love curry chicken. So if you're anywhere in the Coachella Valley, head on out to Desert Hot Springs. They're located in the Stater Brothers Shopping Center. Highly recommend them. If you've got a craving for this type of food, you will not be disappointed. And, they're doing dine-in now. So it's a nice, small little place, very quaint, decorated well. And they would love to have you there. And I guarantee you, you're going to have a meal that's out of this world because, that's what everybody's saying. Taste of Indy and Desert Hot Springs. All right, where are we at? As a council member, you get people who generally write to you. And they send you emails. So we've got a man out in Desert Hot Springs who makes it a point to let us know when there's problems in the city. And he drives around, takes pictures, and emails them to us, and does it frequently. And some of the times you're thinking, maybe you're going a little bit overboard here, but every once in a while you get a gem. Someone says, wow, I am sure glad that you took the time to take that picture, provide the address, let us know about the problem, because I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other people looking at the same thing, but they're not taking the time to do like you are to try and fix the problem. And anybody time somebody stops, takes out a pencil and paper, just takes a little bit of time out of their day to report something, and then can get the city out there to go fix it, well, that's a good day. But to let you know what city council members go through sometimes in the frustration, and this one happened to be, one in particular I'm thinking of, happened to be a vacant lot where somebody had gone and dumped some stuff, and that happens. And we've got a city program that we put in place to go patrol vacant lots and collect stuff, and immediately collect it, not wait. And we had people calling us all the time saying, when are you ever going to get this lot cleaned up? And the approach was to try and find the owner and cite them and make them do it. And we finally said, we have got to get this city cleaned up. And Desert Hot Springs has made such great strides in getting cleaned up. I had somebody contact me recently. He says, hey, I'm looking for cheap rent. Is there anywhere that I can find? And is there anything in your city? I said, I don't think we're the cheap rent district anymore in Desert Hot Springs. I mean, we've made some great improvements in getting the city, to take a, move up a notch on the ladder of success. So anyhow, one of the very successful programs has been going around and making sure there isn't junk everywhere. Another program was, you won't find graffiti in Desert Hot Springs. I mean, you may see it if you're up real early in the morning, but it's going to be covered over very, very quickly. We are fanatical about covering over graffiti. It's safe to say Desert Hot Springs is graffiti-free, and I'm sure the people who put up graffiti must be as frustrated as they can possibly be. In fact, it's shocking to me when I go down to another city and I see graffiti. Wait, graffiti, get it. Well, it's that way with the junk that was being deposited in the vacant lots. And I had people call and say, hey, when are you ever going to do something about this? And just totally irritated. I mean, some people are not even nice about it. People like to call and yell at their council member, and that's okay. So one guy was calling me, says, wow, I don't know what you're doing, but thanks a lot. I mean, something was deposited there. I was getting ready to call, and here comes this big yellow truck to pick it up. So here's the frustration. And this is what council members run into when they deal with city staff sometimes. Because we got this program that we put in place that the council initiated, said, we're going to deal with this. Here's what we're going to do. We came up with this plan, and we put it in place, and we said, we're going to fund it and do it. And staff said, okay, we'll do it and put it in place. And the whole idea was that we'll figure out who's responsible for it, but right now we're not just going to let it sit there while waiting to see who's responsible. So there was this one lot on this one street that Joseph called and let us know about. That's the guy who goes around letting us know about all these issues. And he writes and he says, hi, will you take care of this in a normal fashion? Write back, say, already been turned in, and thank you very much. As soon as I got your notice, I turned it in, and work order's issued, and the crew will be around. So I send it off to the crew, and they say, yep, no problem. We'll get this one done. It's on the list. We'll take care of it. It won't be there over the Memorial Day weekend. The long weekend, it'll be gone. So then I got an email that says, hey, update. We were all ready to go pick that up, but we got a notice from Code canceling the work order. They decided that they would rather cite the owner of the property, and so they want the stuff there, and they want to go work out with the owner of the property to pick it up. Now, I get that I want to cite the owner who's letting that stuff go on, who's got continual dumping on their property. If it's an apartment owner that's letting their tenants go and dump the stuff out, not watching it, we got that problem and we got to deal with it. And I don't want to put that aside. But I don't want to put that aside at the expense of leaving a bunch of junk in a vacant lot just to prove a point on code enforcement. Get the stuff cleaned up and then go figure out how you're going to deal with this owner. There's ways to do that. So now this junk is, I had to write back to Joseph and say, Joseph, thanks for the report, but sorry, this junk that got dumped in this lot is going to stay there at least all weekend. And so in my meetings with the city council with the city staff on Tuesday, I'll ask about this. And if you happen to be listening, I hope you have the answer for me, because I want to know why you decided to keep a vacant lot junk littered when it should have been cleaned up over Memorial Day weekend. People driving by see this stuff. You know, job one is clean it up. Job two is, and if it has to work simultaneously, is to figure out how to keep it from happening again and cite the people that are doing it. But I'm going to give you an example here of what took place years and years ago and the frustration. For those of you who don't know, I speak Chinese. That's my second language. I lived there for 8 years in China, and I picked up the language. So I'm walking into City Hall, and of course, you know, when you hear somebody speaking Chinese, you pick up on it right away. I know some people who aren't familiar with Asian languages might think Korean is Chinese. I could tell the difference. So I hear this guy talking Chinese and trying to communicate with city staff, and I ask what's going on. He says, oh, well, he's got some problems, some code enforcement problems in his yard, and he's got some cleaning up he needs to do. And I could tell that he was speaking limited English. I said, well, listen, if you need any help translating, let me know. I'm happy to step in. I speak Chinese, and we'll deal with this. Oh, no, it's a problem. We got it covered. So I thought, okay, everything's taken care of. Well, about a year and a half later, maybe 2 years later, I get a call from this guy's nephew. He lives up in L.A., and he says, hey, my grandpa just got a fine for $2,000 for this stuff that's been in his yard. So as I look into it, I find out it's the same guy who they were talking to in the parking lot. And it had been 2 years to work through this process. I mean, they're sending this guy notices. First fine was $100. And he's getting this thing in English, which he can't read. And, the years go by through this whole code enforcement process. But meanwhile, everybody in this neighborhood is looking at this mess. So I tell the guy from the nephew, I said, come on, I'll meet you down there on Saturday. Let's go take a look, see what we got going on. So I go there and I go, you can't do this. And it turned out the grandpa was a little bit paranoid about intruders. And what he had set up was barriers. You know, things to keep people from going in the yard, like all the trash cans stacked right in front of the front walkway is a barrier with a couple other things in the way. And then big long boards across the driveway and all kinds of, and it just looked a mess from the neighborhood. I mean, it looked a little, you know, out there. Like the guy didn't have everything quite together in his mind, and he didn't. But here's this mess that goes on for 2 years. And the point is, I said, look, you get all this stuff down by the curb. I'll get the crew out here. We'll get that picked up. You'll probably have to pay a dumping fees and all that, but we'll just get this cleaned up and boom and done. So on one Saturday, that problem is solved. So one way is go clean up the mess and it's done. And the other way is, no, we're going to follow this procedures. Darn it, we're going to have to follow code. And we're not going to pick this up. And we're not going to work this out another way. We're going to follow this bureaucratic system to get this stuff done. Now, I know I'm getting some people mad at me if they're listening. I'm sorry. But the bottom line is, what is important is the goal. What is important is trash not sitting on a lot for the entire Memorial Day weekend. We had a work order in place to pick it up. Why didn't we do that? Go chase down the owner. Tell him you're going to pay a fine, whatever you're going to do. But I don't want to look at garbage on a vacant lot when I had a work order in place to clean it up. Oh, I'm getting way too animated today. I got to take a break. Well, at the top of the hour we do that, but we got just a bit more here to go on the Rust Bed Show. Glad to have you with us, and we're back with more.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right. We're back. This is the Russ Betts Show, where we've managed to go, unlike other talk shows, we've managed to go 2 hours. Not even mentioning the name of the President of the United States. Imagine that. I'm looking at the news feed here, and you know, I'm glad we don't cover all that stuff. There's so much more interesting things to cover. I'm gonna delve into a little bit of it here, not much. You all heard where Attorney General Barr said, he said, history is written by the winners, except that was only a partial quote by NBC. And I'm looking at this little political cartoon, and political cartoons say so much and with so little space. I mean, if you get a good cartoonist, and I can never read their names. This one, I guess, is by Andrews McNeil. He actually wrote his name neatly. No, it's not. They sign their political cartoons and you can never see them. So they need to do something to give themselves more credit. But anyhow, this one is Abraham Lincoln complaining because he had this quote that said, "You can fool all of the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time." And he's complaining because that quote was edited by NBC News. And it said, according to this cartoonist, so the quote was, "You can fool all of the people all of the time." And this shows the text stricken out where somebody split the quote. But anyhow, that was the dig on NBC News, is that they had split Barr's quote where he said, "History is written by the winners, but in the case of General Flynn, we think justice is being served," and that's not, anyhow, all right. I don't want to get off on those issues. I shouldn't even have brought this one up. I'm just going to put it aside. We're going to move on to something far less controversial. I tell you what, if you want to get a conversation started at the dinner table or on social media, start talking about face masks. Well, so we're going to move on to something not controversial. India joins most Valley cities in issuing an order requiring face coverings. They call them face coverings in public instead of face masks. And that includes its stores and picking them up. And, you know, our city did the same thing. When we heard that Riverside County supervisors were going to relax the standard on wearing face masks, our city, Desert Hot Springs, said, you know, that's not exactly what we want to do. We don't agree with that. We think they're important that people continue to wear them. And so that's what we did. We make sure that if you're in City Desert Hot Springs, then, you know, it was about, what, Tuesday before the Friday decision out of the supervisors, we put in place an ordinance that said you will wear masks. Caused some confusion when the county said no and everybody else found out that no, in Desert Hot Springs it's still yes. And then it was a few days after that that Palm Springs did it, and then I forget who was next, but now all the rest of the Coachella Valley cities now have an order in place requiring face masks. And part of the reason for that is everybody views this as a way to get the stores opened up. Remember, everything was shut down, still tight as a drum. Restaurants couldn't open back then. And now you look and you see part of the guidelines, exactly as we said, part of the guidelines are that people wear masks and the restaurant can open up. So why relax it? Why not just keep it in place? And that's what we did. We viewed it as a way to get the stores open quicker. But of course, to a lot of people, the masks are a big infringement on their personal liberties. And that gets to be a very heated discussion. And then there's people that don't like wearing masks. And what you hear them say is, well, it's 100 degrees outside. Why am I wearing a mask? And I got into one of those discussions on social media. And I explained to them, I says, you know, it's not 100 degrees when you're in the store. And they said, well, what's the order? And so I had to go back and look at actually what we voted on. And what we voted on was, if you're outside in the presence of other people and you're talking, put on the mask. And when you go into a store, wear the mask. And I'm thinking about how many times a day when I go out and about, am I wearing a mask? How many minutes out of the 24-hour period that I'm doing stuff, how many days or hours am I wearing a mask? Now, I understand for the grocery workers and the people inside the stores, it's a long time to be wearing a mask. Everybody gets tired of it. But for most people, you pull up in your car, you park, you walk through the parking lot, you put on your mask as you go in the store, You do your shopping with a mask on, which 99.9% of the people are doing. And then when you leave, you check out, you wash your hands with your hand sanitizer, and then you take off your mask, and you go about your day, back into your air-conditioned car, and away you go. So, anyhow, Indio is finally, all Coachella Valley cities now are requiring masks, and I say that's a good thing. And I know there's some of them out there that just think it is just absolutely, you know, the biggest infringement on your freedoms. And I'm wondering, when you see the sign that says no shoes or no shirt and no service, do you consider the fact that you're having to wear a shirt when you go into a business an infringement on your freedoms? Or a, you know, when you have to wear shoes going into a store or a restaurant, is that some big infringement on your freedoms? Well, the store is requiring a mask, and I know what it is that Americans just are not used to wearing a mask. And you know, I haven't spent a lot of time in Asia. Masks are like a normal thing. You don't even think about it. It's just commonplace. And here it still looks funny to us, but I am just absolutely amazed that Americans are actually now wearing masks in the numbers that they are. There's a lot of things to be amazed at. California leased 15,000 hotel rooms to help homeless people. Well, half of them are sitting empty. I don't know how much money they spent on it, but the program was to get homeless people off the streets and occupied in rooms so that they could get some sanitation and help to stop the spread, the spread of the coronavirus. And less than 5% of the 151,000 people who sleep on the street under bridges ended up finding a hotel room. And half of the rooms they leased, they're not able to fill. And I don't understand this, because I knew a couple of people that were homeless in our city. And I called to make an inquiry. Hi, I've got people who could really use a room. They're concerned. They say, hey, I can't practice the proper sanitation. And if I can get a hotel room, that would be great. So we called, and they called. And the first thing they heard was, well, sorry, the program's all full up. And then the next thing I call and I ask what's going on. And they say, well, sorry, the program's all full up. That sold out in 2 weeks. Well, now here I am reading an article in the Los Angeles Times from May 19th that says half the hotel rooms were sitting empty. There's still hotel rooms available. So who's administering these programs? I mean, you spent all this money on these hotel rooms. You got people who could actually use a hotel room. And the program is just sitting there empty. I don't get it. All right, I'm starting to sound like I'm complaining too much. That's it. You know what's next on my schedule for today? Mom's birthday. She's 93 years old today. Happy birthday, Mom. I just saw my sister calling during the show, and I'm going to give her a return call. And then before then, I'm going to bid all of you a good day. We're on Encore schedule next week. I won't be here next week. We're doing some upgrades to this studio, making it even more high-tech than it already is. I'm amazed at this equipment that we have in this studio and this little iHub radio station doing many, many good things. So we won't be here next week. We'll be on Encore Performance, but we'll see you after that. This is Russ Betts signing off from iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs.